City, Colorado Springs, Colorado. This is the USA Volleyball Show, and here are your hosts, Clarence Hughes and Stephen Munson.
Hello, and welcome to the USA Volleyball Show, the official podcast of USA Volleyball. My name is Stephen Munson, of course, always joined by Clarence Hughes, my co-host. Had to keep it short for this one, Clarence, because we got a great episode and kind of a long one too.
But you had at least
long in a great way.
You had 3 seconds in here. You know, that was short, but that was a little too short. But it's okay. I'm not going to talk about it like that. How you doing, Steve? Hey, man.
I'm doing good. You know, I'm a little tired of this Colorado weather that we're having. We're getting a little
I need to make a decision on what we want to do.
Now, one or the other.
Is it raining? Is it hot? Is it springtime? Yep. I don't know. It needs to make a decision. It needs to make a decision now.
Today. A couple weeks ago, I sat on a patio for like 6 hours and it was nice. It was great. Literally the next weekend, it was snowing. Maybe even later, it was snowing.
Nice.
So that's Colorado for you.
Yeah. Total bad luck. I was, I left on the 4th of April. And it was snowing, and I barely beat like all the flight delays. Got to Springfield, got to Salt Lake City, and it was snowing there. So it was just snow throughout like the first week I was there. But those couple of days that we had in between weekends, it was pretty hot, and it was pretty great weather. And then it got right back to kind of snowing. So it was great. It was great.
Yeah, I bet you're all over the place with just how much travel you're doing and different time zones you got going on, different weather you got going on in each place.
Oh yeah.
Like, your body has no idea what's going on.
No, it's like, dude, chill out before we catch a cold or something.
That's right. Yeah. I hear you have an exciting trip coming up this weekend as well.
Actually, yeah, I do. At the time of this recording, I actually leave tomorrow, Thursday the 27th, to go to the Far Western Qualifier and coach with my club team, our 16s. Yep, we'll be there in Reno. Never been to Reno before, so I'm excited to see what the city's like. I actually leave. We leave and get done on the 30th, which is actually my birthday. So I'll be traveling.
Oh, that's right.
Traveling on that day. Yeah.
Happy early birthday as well.
Thank you.
Man, what a week you got coming for you.
I know.
I was just about to ask you something. What was it? Dang it.
Okay.
Well, I can't remember.
How's Tess doing?
Tess is great. Yeah. Thank you for asking. She's doing well. For those who don't know, who may have missed it on a previous episode, we are expecting a baby August 19th, a baby boy. So super exciting. Playing it out just right after kind of like busy travel season, at least for myself. But super exciting for the most part. She's doing great, symptom free. I think really just sleep and just waking up multiple times during the night is the big thing. But other than that, you know, hasn't really been nauseous at all, and hasn't had any like crazy food cravings either, which is great, I guess, or maybe not great. I don't know.
were they weird before that, her pregnancy? Were they weird before
food cravings?
No. You can be honest. You can throw under the bus. It's okay. We don't know. That's
kidding. Yeah, nothing weird. Actually, at the very start, she really wanted Subway veggie sandwiches. She like, for whatever reason, just like the bread like was just like doing it for her, and really needed Subway bread. Like, didn't care that it was just like a veggie sandwich. She just wanted the bread for whatever reason.
Just walking Subway. Hey,
but she's gotten over that too. That doesn't sound good to her anymore.
Haven't you yet? Anything stuff?
No, I think so, because we're getting a lot of hand-me-down baby items and clothes and stuff from, you know, my brother and sister-in-law had a baby last year, so we're getting stuff from them. You know, other friends have dropped off some things, so super exciting. We got a couple other close friends too that are expecting babies this year as well, so we're kind of all going through it together, which is fun.
Wow, it's like you guys all planned that.
That's right. <Yeah. laughs> Trying to work on my dad jokes. So trying to get that ready.
We drop some, you know, sprig or something throughout this episode.
Maybe next episode. Or you never know what'll come up. Maybe I'll have something come out of nowhere. We'll see. but let's. I mean, enough of the chit chat. We got a great episode, long in a great way, but a great episode for you. But before we get to that, if you haven't had the chance yet, listen to or watch our latest episode, the last episode. We celebrate our 2-year anniversary, 2 years for the show. We were celebrating that with just talking about some of our favorite memories, moments of the show. So be sure to check that out. And we also sat down with U.S. Beach National Team athlete and 3-time Manhattan Beach Open champion Trevor Crabb ahead of a couple FIVB events in Brazil. He talks about growing up on the beach in Hawaii, playing with his friend, sharing about what he looks forward to in the season and, you know, what he looks for in a great beach partner. Share some hobbies outside of beach volleyball. I think he drops a cheat meal as well. His favorite tournament snacks as well. So be sure to listen to that on all podcast platforms or watch on usavolleyball.org or the USA Volleyball YouTube channel. So let's move on with news with Hughes.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have quite the lineup today with news with Hughes. First up, congratulations to Team USA, Chase Frischman and Cody Cladwell for winning gold at the Norseca event in Aguascalientes, Mexico. Chase and Cody defeated Mexico in the finals, actually. Congratulations to Team USA, Gina Urango and Carly Scott for winning silver in the same event. Another congratulations to Chase Budinger and Miles Evans for winning silver at the FIVB in Saquarema. Did I pronounce that one right? Saquarema Challenge. In those, in a very, very, very close match to Brazil's top seeded team. This was a couple weeks ago, but hadn't been able to congratulate them. So again, the congratulations on your win and making it to the podium. The 2023 annual award winners have been revealed. The awards will be presented at USA Volleyball Hall of Fame banquet and ceremony on May 24th at the Omni Hotel in Dallas, Texas. The 2023 honorees include Rebecca B. Howard Diversity and Inclusion Award winner Jace Butch of the Oklahoma region and Referee of the Year winner Alexis Sheldon of the Badger region, who actually was just at the Salt Lake City Showdown. She's amazing. See the full list on winners at usavolleyball.org. Hall of Fame tickets are also now available and for sale for May 24th in Dallas, Texas. Celebrate with USA Volleyball's greatest and get your tickets right now. The Volleyball Nations League is coming to the United States. Watch the world's best volleyball athletes in person on home soil, beginning with the Men's Week 3-leg hosting in Anaheim, California from July 4th through July 9th. And then watch the Women's Finals in Arlington, Texas from July 12th through July 16th. Buy your VNL tickets for Anaheim and Arlington right now. Interested in men's college volleyball? Check out our website for weekly roundups to stay up to date on results, rankings, key matchups, and much, much more. The NCAA Men's Volleyball Championship semifinals begin this week on May 4th. So tune in and stay tuned into the stream on NCAA.com. And the championship will be on May 6th on ESPN2. On a related note, congratulations to friend of the show and UCLA Men's Volleyball head coach John Sparrow on being named the Mountain Pacific Sports Federation Coach of the Year. Looking forward to seeing him and how the Bruins do in the tournament, and of course, seeing him back on the USA sideline this summer. Side note, Steven, who you got winning the tournament?
Oh, well, I mean,
gotta keep it quick.
Gotta be a little biased here. I'm going UCLA.
That's not what you said before we started recording. I'm just kidding.
That is what I didn't say anything.
I'm kidding. I know.
I was keeping it secret.
I would like to see UCLA versus Hawaii, and I'm sorry, but I got to go Hawaii. So we'll see. We'll see who wins after that. We have to place a bet on it afterwards. But yeah, should be a very, very, very fun tournament. But we're not done with news and cues. The 2023 USA Volleyball Beach National Championship will return to Fort Lauderdale, Florida on July 18th through the 23rd. Registration is now open on usavbracketpal.com. All questions can be directed to beachevents@usav.org. For more on all the latest news, visit usavolleyball.org.
Happy News Day.
That was
heavy news day. That was great.
Mm-hmm.
Nicely done. Yeah, exciting. Excited to see the men's tournament, the men's volleyball tournament coming up.
100%.
And by the time you're listening to this episode, a few of the matches would have already happened. But, you know, exciting to see King get in there. Of course, the conference. Let me make sure I get this right. Conference Carolina champions. So congratulations to them. And they're playing Ohio State, which, of course, shout out to another former guest, Jacob Pasture, junior on that team. So looking forward to watching. Well, I actually don't know if they're going to be streaming those, but hopefully, you know, we get to see Jacob on the stream in the semifinals. That'd be a lot of fun.
Those are usually on like ESPN Plus sometimes too. So
ESPN Plus, okay.
Plus, definitely checking to see if it's streaming on one of those platforms. But if not, you know, try to keep up as best you can on any, you know, any news updates you guys got for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sure we'll also have our Mint College Roundup following the tournament that you can check out on usavolleyball.org, like Clarence, you mentioned earlier. But exciting episode. Very excited into this episode. But let's get to today's guest. She was a little concerned at the start of the episode, thinking, you know, she wasn't going to do well, or she was very nervous. But
I think
she crushed it.
I really think she hustled us.
She hustled us. That's right. Downplayed it a little bit. And then, yeah. Awesome conversation with her. We chat with, of course, Tokyo Paralympic gold medalist and U.S. women's sitting and national team outside hitter and opposite Whitney Doste. Whitney was so fun to have on the podcast, and we got to learn a lot more about her. We talk about everything from her time playing standing volleyball and her attending the American Ballet Theater and Dance Theater of Harlem to her winning the gold medal at the Tokyo Paralympic Games, her owning and operating her own swimwear company. Of course, that's Wavelength Swimwear that we talk
about. Will be activating at
the
Open National Championship.
Breaking news. Love that. That's awesome to see that. Yeah, so definitely if you're at Opens, definitely go check out Whitney's booth. Say hi to Clarence as well, but also check out the sitting courts and watch those matches and stick around afterwards too. You'll get to meet some of the players. Of course, our women's sitting team will be there. Most of the athletes, I think, will be there. And, you know, they're the 2-time Paralympic gold medalists. So definitely stick around to say hi to them and meet them and talk to them about sitting volleyball. But let's finally get to it. Here's Whitney. Whitney, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us. We're super excited. Like we just talked about offline, I missed the chance to catch up with you at your training camp at Colorado Springs. So great to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us.
Me.
I want to start off with this funny story that just heard from producer Curtis Ward, who I think he was reviewing a media day interview that you did a while back, but you told us this story about an experience with the youth national team and something about making your bed or not making your bed. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
The reason why I make my bed every day.
That's it.
Yes, I was on the youth national or just junior national team, I believe. Okay. It was years ago. So I was like high school, maybe like 16 or so. And we were training. I think we were still going through cuts, and we were at a training camp, and we were still breaking the team down some. And I remember, I believe Annie Banikowski was the coach from UCLA, the junior team. And might have been like the second day of practice, and we all show up, and it was after breakfast. We're there, and he has us all line up on the end line. And this is the beginning of practice. I don't know if we'd done like maybe a light warm up yet, or it was just kind of like a check in, but it was kind of an exercise to like ground the team and see where we were at, I think. And he asks us who made their bed that morning. And I only recall one person raising their hand, and we all, the rest of us, he's like, okay, go ahead and like start running. And one of them like doing like, I don't know if it was just up and back or if it was a handful, but I remember being upset because like my mom taught me better. She's like, it's not like you go like hang out with your friends, you have a sleepover, and then you like lose track of doing your like your routine or the things you were used to doing. So I was like embarrassed a little bit myself, because I was like, this is something I do every day, and then I come,
mom trained me for this,
right? No. I didn't make my bed, and I was on the line with everybody else. And I don't think that person ran. I think they had to like watch us run.
Oh, that's the worst. Did you ever tell your mom about that? Like, hey, I had to run because I didn't make my bed.
Yeah,
she probably made you run too.
Like, excuse me. What? So I was like, I know.
But embarrassing me out here in front of these coaches that I'm not even around.
Exactly. To this day, though, I mean, I do my best of making my bed every day, just for, you know, it sets the tone of the day. And I think that's kind of like what it was showing us. Like, you show up, you're on, you know, keeping your house in order, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think my mom, or she probably did. My mom did teach me to make my bed. I don't think I ever did growing up, but now as an adult, and it's not so much as like starting the day off right, I think it's more of like when I get to bed, I want a nice like made bed, and it's just like so comfortable, cozy, versus it being, you know, destroyed. Yeah. But I, for the most part, I do pretty good. I think I make it almost every day.
Yeah. You guys think I'm so weird. And my mom obviously taught me how to make my bed growing up and everything too. But when I was like younger, I barely remember this, but I used to get up at like 3 a.m. and just make up my bed, like while I was like already asleep.
3 a.m.?
Like 3 a.m., right?
Did you get back in after
you? Yeah, I would. It made no sense, apparently. So she was like, yeah, I was trying to ask you. Yeah, and I don't know why I did it, but yeah, I've been making my bed up ever since. Not at 3 a.m., but it was the most random thing. She makes fun of me for it all the time, so it's so fun.
Like a halftime, just like,
I don't know. I know I'm a little bit of a neat freak, but I was like, dang, really? I used to do that? I remember that.
Like, as a kid, when my mom was like, you have to make your bed in the morning, like, to get ready to go to school and everything, there was a time period where I was like, well, instead of like unmaking my bed at night, I remember I just would go get like different blankets and lay on top. So in the morning, I would just like cover my, I would like lay on
top. Oh, yeah.
Kept new covers on, and then just like pulled up those blankets, and my bed was made. And I remember I was like, I'm beating the system here.
You got your waist and covers. Yeah.
That's smart.
I thought it was then.
That's awesome. I love that story. Well, wanted to kind of kick things off with, we love hearing about backgrounds or the athletes' backgrounds, and you have a very unique background that I don't think many of our, at least our, you know, national team athletes have this experience, maybe a few, but you have a ballet background, grew up dancing. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, what got you interested in ballet and, you know, where you trained or danced growing up?
I don't know exactly what got me interested, or if it was one of those things like when you're a kid, I think a lot of young girls are like put into dance maybe as like a starter kind of thing to see how they do. But I know I used to always walk on my toes, and I kind of was like bouncing around a lot. So my mom was like, all right, let's just put her in dance and see how she does. And I loved it. I did ballet for years. I think probably started like around 5 or 6, and then like did it through high school, the majority of high school before I found volleyball. And then I would go to like summer training camps in New York. And I went to the Dance Theater of Harlem for a couple summers, Alvin Ailey for a summer, and then the American Ballet Theater for a summer. And it was the coolest experience that I think even now it's the coolest experience, given that I've done some other things since then. But then I was like, this is awesome. Like, I thought I was going to grow up, I wanted to be like a starving artist. Like, I'm going to live in New York and we're just going to hang out. I used to be center stage, and I was like, this is my life. Like, this is what's coming for me. And I just love it. I loved it.
You know, you loved it and everything. What was the hardest part about ballet? Because I know that is not easy at all.
It's the hardest part. It is tough to take a day off. Like, I know that's for any sport or anything, but I just feel like ballet training, it's like the discipline and like the movements that are required of your body. You have to be training on those things, like the small elements before getting to the grand movement, like every single day to like get to the point you want to get to. I'd say the consistency of dance and the discipline it takes is like almost the mindset is probably the hardest part about it. I mean, like, honestly, physically moving your bodies in some way that like isn't natural, that's extremely hard too. But ballet is a mindset, I think.
When you said like you were always on your toes or bouncing around, I just imagine your mom was like, let's just get her into something so you can get all the energy out
and keep her contained. And we would be in grocery stores and like the aisles.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Up and down. And sometimes doing cartwheels. But just plant her somewhere and see how that energy does.
That's a lot. Yeah. Cartwheels in grocery stores, huh?
Okay. Yeah.
I think you touched on it a little bit, but what were some of your favorite memories or like, what did you enjoy most about ballet?
For sure, the trips to New York. And I think getting to experience different types of dance. I went to the American Ballet Theater my first year ever going to New York. And that was, it's very classical ballet. I was around so many other dancers. I'm from Tucson, Arizona. And at the time, I know like dance is really improved a lot in the little city, but like at the time there wasn't much other forms of dance besides, for me, ballet, like tap, jazz, kind of like the base, the core disciplines of dance. And then going to New York, I think my eyes were just opened up to all the different forms of dance, and I don't know, it was almost like overwhelming to see. And it just, I think, continued like my drive for wanting to do better or try different forms. And then I went to Alvin Ailey, I think, my next summer, which is modern dance. There might have been a LA class on the schedule, like a week or maybe two a week, as opposed to like having a couple different forms of ballet in like one day at the American Ballet Theater. So I think just being exposed to so many different forms of dance at that age was something that I just really enjoyed.
Do you miss anything about ballet, or do you still like kind of catch yourself doing some movements every
like at practice or like yeah. random points when like with your teammates and such?
I think I still do a few movements here and there. I definitely miss it. I think I don't think my intention of when I found volleyball, the intention, I don't know how I was going to do it, but I was like, oh, I can always do both. And then one of them kind of had to fall off a little as I progressed more in volleyball. But yeah, I miss ballet. I mean, I don't know if I could physically still do it, but when I see it like on TV, or if I hear there's a show or something, or if I find out someone's a dancer, I just like, I eat that up. I'm like, oh, tell me.
Go on to the rabbit hole. Do you do any other kind of dancing? Maybe hip hop, jazz, tap, anything. You said breakdance?
I was joking. I don't breakdance, but a bird just hit the window. I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh. Oh no.
I know. We just saw your facial expressions. I don't want to laugh at that,
but I hope it's okay.
No, I don't do any other forms of dance. I mean, for fun, I guess, like if music comes on. But nothing serious anymore.
All right, top three artists, music, go. Spotify playlist artists, bam.
Oh, no, I'm terrible at this. No, like it's on shuffle. Oh.
All right, how about top three genres you like to listen to? How about that? No?
I'm like, whatever.
Put her on the spot.
Oh my God.
I feel terrible. I wish I could.
I'm the same way. I do shuffle all the time. I'm really bad. I like.
Claire, it's really funny.
That was the best reaction ever.
That was good.
You're like, whoa, this wasn't in the script. What are we doing here?
Well, not,
not in here.
Yeah, like, Pat, like, find another top fruit ass me in five more minutes.
All right, well, I'll come back with another random question when we get back into the flow of things. All right, so I think we covered dance and ballet enough. We're going to put a pin in your music playlist, so have that in the back of your head. But, you know, how were you introduced to the game of volleyball? Let's go back to that game here. I know everybody has a pretty unique story.
Yeah, mine, I don't know if it's that unique. I, like, in middle school, I think was the first time I ever played. Just, you know, it was basic volleyball, like sand at the end line. Like, I think we underhand served it, rotated in the circle. But that was the first time I ever really stepped on a court for volleyball or ever found any interest in it. And I think it was just offered at school and I gave it a shot. Then I got to high school. I didn't start playing volleyball until my junior year. And my sister played basketball at our high school, and I think the coaches all kind of were like, hey, we should get your sister, like, ask her to play volleyball. So every year the volleyball coach would be like, hey, you know, volleyball tryouts are coming up, you know, and I was shy, and I'd be like, well, I have ballet, you know, like, I was like, I'm a dancer. And then that was like freshman year, junior year, and then going into my junior year, I was at a camp in New York for ballet, and I just told my mom, I was like, I think I'd like to try a sport or do something before I leave high school and, like, maybe try something like a team-like setting. And we came back, and I know tryouts were, like, in a couple of weeks, and I just came out for the volleyball team for the first time. So, I don't know. It was probably always in my ear, but nothing I've really ever considered as something I really wanted to do. And then I just thought, like, hey, it'd be fun to play a sport going into junior year.
What was it about volleyball that hooked you, that made you want to stick with it?
I was about to ask that.
Yeah, I think, like, as opposed to any other sport. I knew I played, like, in middle school for whatever that was. I was like, well, I've touched the volleyball before at least once. Yeah. My underhand serve. And then I was getting taller. I was pretty tall at that point. I don't know. For some reason, I just felt like volleyball was going to be something that I was going to be able to it's not easy, but, like, more easily jump into trying than maybe basketball or I don't exactly know. I think probably my height and then someone asking me if I kept wanting to play was something. I was like, volleyball might be the sport. So that was my decision.
Sounds like a little bit of peer pressure, but, you know, we're not.
It worked out.
It worked out pretty well.
Did you ever try basketball at all, or was it just
basketball in middle school again? I think, yeah, never in high school, but I grew up around basketball. My dad played basketball. My sister played basketball. She went to the University of Tennessee and then transferred to ASU. So I have always played basketball because I've always had to guard her when she was working on drills. So I, in some form or another, basketball has been a part of my life.
Got it.
For a while. And maybe that's why I didn't choose basketball. I was like, I want to try something different. So
Who's your, you follow the NBA? Who's your favorite team? Random question.
Well, the Mercury. I don't care.
They just had their draft too.
They did.
Kicking up the season right now, starting the season.
Yeah. Fun fact, I used to work for the Sparks back in 2016 and 2017. Really? So I missed the year they won, but I got to do the ring ceremony the following year. And it was a fun time. WNBA is a really, really, really great organization.
Yeah. Yeah. And they've been doing good lately. Like, it's cool to see it in the public eye a lot more than
Was there anything from your ballet background that kind of helped you as you got into volleyball?
Yes, I would say physically, I would say ballet, probably, especially at that age, when I was still growing and I was pretty tall and I was, like, kind of lanky, it gave me a lot of body awareness. It helped me a lot with, like, my balance. And volleyball is such a lateral sport. I think if I had not done ballet before that and I just jumped right in, I probably would have struggled more with a lot of the movements than I probably did. But I would say definitely the movement wise and body control. Yeah.
For our listeners here, they might know you, you know, as, you know, Tokyo Paralympic gold medalist on the U.S. women's sitting national team. But before that, you were a D1 college player on the standing side of the game at Arizona. You played overseas and then unfortunately had a terrible injury. But for our listeners, and we've shared this story of yours in a couple other different mediums. But for those listening who haven't heard your story, can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, I am from Tucson, Arizona. I ended up after high school going to college at the University of Arizona. I played indoor for a number of years at this point. I'm like, don't even quite remember, but I
solid blur.
Yeah, it's like it feels like sometimes like another lifetime, which is so cool that I feel like I'm getting a chance to live it again, sort of in a different way. But I, after college, I went and played overseas for a few seasons. I played in Puerto Rico, Korea, Switzerland, Azerbaijan, and then last was Turkey, and that's where I had my injury. My initial injury is I dislocated my ankle, and then I ended up having surgery right away in Turkey, and then I had surgeries before, so I kind of just thought we like put me back together and I'd be able to get back out on the court soon. And the most part, surgery went well, everything went fine. But at that point in my life and career, I mean, my ankle was old, like from being a ballet dancer to probably all the pounding and stuff from sports at that point. I didn't have any more cartilage. It started to develop a lot of arthritis after my surgery. But at this time, I still thought it was something possible to come back to the standing game. Mm-hmm. And I think I was trying to do it as play volleyball any way I could. I was like, oh, well, maybe playing in sand because it's softer, it might be better. So I started playing. I was in Florida at the time, and I started playing some beach volleyball. But I mean, beaches on sand's not stable, so it's not very good for an ankle that you're trying to get back into playing. I just kept kind of rehabbing, testing my ankle, seeing what it could do, and then just got to the point where nothing standing up was that great as far as running and jumping. I was in pain a lot. It started to self-fuse, but not quite in the correct spot. And I'd already had like a scope to clean out a lot of the scar tissue for previous surgery and, you know, rehab. And then the final straw is like, I got it, my ankle fused in 2021. So the initial injury was in 2014, and that was kind of a journey up to that point.
How has the rehab been going for that since 2021?
Oh, it's fine. It's perfect. Yeah. It's perfect as a fused ankle.
Yeah.
The only regret I have is probably not having fused it sooner.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Like probably a good year in so much pain that I didn't know. I'd never met anyone with a fused ankle, and I don't go on the internet to find information about people with a fused ankle because it's usually not the good reviews about a surgery. But I found the most amazing doctor. She's in California. She was a former athlete in college, and she put my ankle back together. Shout out to Martina Randall because she gave me like another life, honestly, for being able to be an athlete still and live a life that like I don't have any more pain in my ankle. So
wow.
Grateful.
Really quickly, I'm not sure if I know exactly what a fused ankle is, but could you explain what that means?
Yeah. To the best of my knowledge, I will. Yeah. So because there was so much arthritis between like my bones, if these are my ankle bones, they went in and they cleaned out a lot of the arthritis. And then I have a plate that's down the front of my ankle. And then I have about 6 screws in my ankle. So once it is put back together with all of the pins and screws and then I believe like your bones like grow back. I believe like as one, it just like fuses back together. So I don't have any in my ankle joint. I don't have any more flexion. So any movement that I have in my foot comes from like the middle of my foot, like my midfoot. And then I have a little bit of side to side movement. So for me, it's I'm just far better off than I was when it was self-fused, though I had more movement. It wasn't correct movement. It limited me. I can kind of like do a little trot right now. Like I have a little bit of like a shuffle jog. But before having it fused, there were just things that I couldn't physically do.
Probably more susceptible to like re-aggravation or re-injury too before that.
Oh yeah.
I'm assuming.
I could walk. Like I already was not walking well, but if I changed my gait a little bit for like a day, the next day, like my whole body felt it, like my back.
Wow.
It wasn't fun. And I, you don't know things until you know them and you seek out like advice or find out, you know, I happened to come across this doctor from another girl who I shared my ankle story with. And she's like, oh, let me put you in touch with this person. And it just like snowballed to this great finding because I hadn't found anyone in my area that had an ankle fusion. No one gave me very much positive feedback or reaction to what having a fused ankle was. And honestly, I hadn't seen it. So I went into it being like, okay, I trust you that I'm going to be pain free. I didn't really wear heels before, but like I can wear like a little, like a good boot I could wear. Like nobody told me the kind of shoes I would be wearing. Nobody told me like was if my gait walking was going to change. I would say for the most part, it doesn't. People, I really have to point out that it might like my ankles fused before people notice that. But yeah, so it was a success.
Well, it's, my apologies for the shows earlier. Injuries and surgeries, like just.
I'm aware, and sometimes probably like very comfortable for me to talk about that. I forget sometimes, like it's not natural for those things to happen. And I think like to have screws and pins in your body, not exactly natural, but it's helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how did you discover sitting volleyball? You know, in addition to that.
Yeah, I was
the women's sitting national team.
Yeah, I kind of I was at home. I was still on the thought process that I was going to someday return to standing volleyball. And I remember my mom was living with my mom at the time in Arizona, and she was watching the Invictus games on TV, like Prince Harry's Invictus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just happened to walk across, like she was in the kitchen. I heard the TV on and I like peeked my head out and I was like, huh. And then I don't know, my wheels started turning. I was like, I wonder if there's anything for sitting volleyball or like volleyball or like if someone has a disability can like I didn't know anything, but that was the hearing that on TV like sparked my interest and going out and looking to see what there was. And then I immediately like sat down like and started Googling, like I was calling it any like sit down volleyball, wheelchair volleyball. I didn't know what I was searching for, but I was like volleyball without having to stand up and run and jump. And then I came across like USA sitting. I don't know if it was, I must have come across USA sitting volleyball, but I knew it was under the USA umbrella. And I felt happy about that because I'd been involved in the programs before growing up with like the youth team and the junior team. And then as many people as I could on the USA like staff or the list that was emails listed, I just started emailing people. And I was like, hey, you know, my name's Whitney Dosti. I played volleyball indoors. I've had an injury, and kind of just seeing what opportunity was there for me, if there was one at all. And then I just emailed a bunch of people and an email came back with some news.
Do you remember who responded?
Yeah.
Just curious.
Actually, I'm not going to say it because I don't quite remember, but
I'm glad they did. Yeah.
Some people might have been like in the room also when the email, like more people were involved
before I think I even got the email. Okay. Like, it came from one person, but like, I think a few people had known about it as it came back. But
what were your like initial thoughts or feelings towards sitting volleyball? We've had Katie Holloway on before, and she talked openly about her initial thoughts, and because she came from the standing side as well and wasn't really too keen on playing sitting volleyball at first, but then grew to love it. What were your initial thoughts?
Yeah. My initial thoughts, I think I was like, I want to play some volleyball.
Yeah.
I hadn't found it yet. And it already been, I think this was 2016. So I'd had my injury already for 2 years, had, I think at that point, two surgeries, and things just weren't looking good for me to come back as an indoor player. And it was like the moment that I saw sitting volleyball, if I was capable of playing. I didn't know if I was going to qualify. I didn't know if how I was going to take to it. But the moment that I found sitting volleyball, I was like, I don't need to be standing to play. I was really interested in getting to learn more and excited about the opportunity to play volleyball in whatever capacity I think that it was.
What was the, it kind of goes back to the same question of your introduction to volleyball, but what was the hook for you for sitting? What kind of kept you interested, wanted you to improve in sitting volleyball?
I think it's like, it for me, coming from standing, it feels a bit like a new game, a new sport. I get to use the same skills. A lot of the skills are the same. I mean, you hit the ball, you rotate your body, passing, you know, your platform and like using your hands. It's all the same. But then it's like, how do you adjust doing that to like a sitting down on a court that is smaller? Everybody's sitting, everything's lower. I think it just became more of like a thrill of like learning a new sport. And that's like kind of like what hooked me in. And like, you do something once and you know, you're not that great at it, but if you like enjoy it and you had fun doing it, you want to go back. And then when you start to see yourself improve, it's like more of a drive to get out there to keep playing. Yeah. And that's probably like what hooked me in the beginning, was just like, this is fun, this is hard, but like, I'm better than I was yesterday. And I have like less blisters today than I did yesterday. So we're going to keep giving it a try.
The thrill of the challenge. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are, what did you learn from your experience, you know, going through that major injury? Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously, you know, climbing and getting to where you are now. Yeah. And also, what advice would you pass along, you know, to another athlete or person dealing with a significant injury?
I mean, it's not easy. I think anyone going through a significant injury, it's tough. And I think I don't know the magic words. I don't know what it is that keeps some people going in a direction as opposed to some people not. But I think I always knew that regardless of what was happening to me physically, like I still had my mindset. I still could. There were other things I would be capable of doing. But then once my ankle really kind of solidified and like, this is how it's going to be, I just felt like there was still so much more I could give. I was hoping to volleyball, but if it wasn't volleyball, maybe it was a different sport or maybe it was something else. There was a time when I was like, well, I'll just become a swimmer now and like figure things out. And I started like going to master swim classes in the morning. Like I was like, well, you know, things change and it's not easy. I think maybe that also was a coping mechanism for me in getting through the hard part of my injury, was just trying to still stay active and find what it was I was going to be able to do. Any advice that I would be able to give would just be, and stick with it, like stick to whatever your heart feels like feeling. And, you know, some days aren't going to be as glamorous and as good or as comfortable, but they do get better. And if you are willing to try new things, you will be surprised at what you are able to find and what you're able to keep, you're capable of doing.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that and sharing your journey and, you know, your experience through all this as well. Thank you.
Yeah.
Kind of sticking on that journey train a little bit still, but you're a Paralympic gold medalist now. Like, has that set in at all? It's, I mean, a couple of years since then, but has that set in at all? And what does that mean to you, like going through that whole journey that you just talked about to now calling yourself a Paralympic gold medalist?
I don't know if it like sets in, but when I hear it back in that way, I'm like, that's right. You know, like I am cool. It's always exciting to think about. And I think having gone through that journey and then at that point up to this point in my life, that being a gold medal, being a result of a lot of the work that I put in starting as a kid, like, I think I always knew as a kid, I knew I was going to be in the Olympics. As a kid, I was a gymnast and I was like, well, gymnastics is the sport. Then I was a swimmer and I was like, swimming is the sport. And then I became volleyball and I was like, oh, this seems more real. I'm like in high school, I'm training overseas. And then I was like, volleyball is the sport. And then when my injury happened, I didn't know what was next, but I knew, like, I was like, well, you know, maybe the Olympics isn't in my cards. Maybe a medalist isn't for me. And then when I found sitting volleyball, I don't know. It just was like, it's still alive. Like, it's still something I was capable of doing. So I think being a gold medalist, it's awesome. It feels really awesome for me. And something I feel like I've been working on since childhood in whatever form that was at that time. So I don't know. It's exciting.
Oh, I love that. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Definitely well-earned, well-deserved, and just an awesome, awesome achievement for you.
Appreciate it.
I love the, you talked a little bit about when you were talking about, you know, your injury and what you were looking for next and everything, but just always, you were always looking ahead at like, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to compete in something and I'm going to find it. I love that. I love that drive. That was so
cool. Yeah. Can you take us back to the moment that you found out you'd be, you know, representing USA at the Paralympics in Tokyo? How did that, you know, like how were you told, you know, was it a phone call? Was it in person? Just, you know, that talk us through that moment and, you know, what were your feelings like?
Yeah, it was a phone call and it came from our head coach, Bill, and I had already moved out to Oklahoma kind of leading up to the games just to train a little more. So I think I was out here about 2 months and we were training and, you know, you don't know, nothing's solid when you're like fighting for a spot. So I think getting a phone call and then just hearing that I get a chance to represent Team USA, it just I'm so excited. It's like, I don't know, the word is beaming that comes to me. It's like I just felt like I was beaming. I was excited. I had been putting a lot of work in. I still knew I had areas to improve on and becoming the player that I want to become, but I was just thrilled to have that opportunity to represent Team USA.
Do you have any favorite, obviously gold is, you know, the moment that sticks, but any other favorite memories or experiences from the games? Did it like kind of, did it live up to expectations? Obviously a very different games from years prior, but yeah, anything like that?
I think some of my favorite times were like hanging out with my teammates in like the village or going to see different areas of the village. That was my first experience going to the Paralympics, and a lot of my teammates had been before. So I think also hearing some of their stories from previous years, also because that Paralympics was so different than years prior. Some of the things I think we would have been capable of doing before, we weren't able to do. So we spent a lot of time together in like the little apartment. And I think just like watching other sports was a highlight for sure. I'd never seen some of the sports I saw. It was a fun time. It was a fun time, like getting to bond over a common goal. And like, even you showed up at Tokyo, like it was work, but it was like a time to be with your team. That's really all we could do at that point, just because of COVID at the time. But yeah, I had a good time.
Kind of sticking out that Tokyo gold medal training here a little bit, but Shortly after, you were invited out to your alma mater, Arizona, and inducted into the Ring of Honor there. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? What does that honor mean to you and your family, and for your journey too, personally?
You know, it means so much to me. My dad played at the University of Arizona, and he passed away in 2021. And it would have been something I would have loved for him to be able to see and be a part of. But as I was getting inducted, I kind of like reflected back on my journey at Arizona, and it like started from childhood. My parents, so my dad went there. And this is how the story goes. Like, I've been told this story by my dad's assistant coach. My dad told me the story at one time or another. But so my dad was in practice, like down on the court in the McHale Arena. And they have like a circular arena. So the top's kind of like a track. And my mom, this is my dad's in college. My parents are in college. My mom used to go and like exercise and run up at the top. And the story goes, my dad like looked up one day and was telling the assistant coach, like it must have been like a water break or something. He's like, one day I'm going to marry that girl. And had like, he did. And then me and my sister, like my sister was a ball girl for the women's team growing up as a child. I would like when she would do that, my parents would take us to the women's basketball games. And my grandmother, before they made like cheerleading outfits, like and sold them, my grandmother made me a University of Arizona cheerleading outfit. And I used to sit on the sidelines, like thinking I was like one of the cheerleaders at like 8 years old, and would cheer. And then, yeah, it just feels like such a full circle moment to know, like, that feels like the beginning of like a toasty legacy that I got to put like complete kind of. And I really, it would have been awesome for my dad to see that and for it to have started with him, and then now our Dosti name getting to be hung up in the arena, just it means a lot. It's an honor.
That is so cool. I'm a sucker for a good love story too. Yeah. And it all started right there. In the gym. That's so cool.
Yeah,
it's awesome. I'm gonna tear up a little bit on that. I don't know. I'm a very emotional person, and hearing stories like that just gets me.
You know, it's something I don't think I thought much of. I was like, oh, cool, I get inducted. And then when I like took a step back, and I think so, they took pictures of us on the court, and I'm gonna get emotional, like seeing how proud my mom was and like her smiling at me. And then to think like that's where they like they didn't meet like just on campus, they might have. But like McHale Center itself is like where he saw her and was like, that's
scary.
And like, this is how things get started. And I used to play there. I played in the same gym as my dad, and just like years apart. It's a really cool feeling.
All right. How do we get the Dosti name on that arena? We got to make some phone calls.
Let me know.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I don't even want to change topics now.
Yes.
All right. Well, the women's sitting national team is coming to Opens in Dallas this year, Open National Championship. I'm excited because this is going to be my second year running the tournament and first year experiencing, you know, the sitting team presence there at the tournament and, you know, the sitting division as well. Yeah. So are you planning to attend Opens? Are you planning to be there in attendance as well?
Yes, I am. And congratulations for running the whole tournament. That's got to be a lot of work.
It's stressful, but it's fun. It's a lot of fun. I love the fact that, I did get handed the adult tournament because I still play a lot of adult volleyball. Okay. I didn't play in college. We played a lot of intramural and tried to get a club team started. But, just adult availability in volleyball is the reason I'm still able to just to play at a level I play at now too. So it does mean a lot. And then super cool just to see international teams and now sitting teams coming. And we also work with Special Olympics North America for the unified, the SONA division. And there's a lot going into it. And I think this year we're working on some clinics and camps for a clinic for the SONA participants. And we're also working with one of the local inner city clubs who maybe are struggling financially with funding, and it's all going to be free, and it's going to be myself and a few other people that have some coaching backgrounds and just doing it. So it's going to be a lot of fun this year. Of course, that's the play party as well.
Yeah,
so it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's cool to get volleyball like that kind of exposure because I don't know. I think like whenever we go to these big tournaments and people kind of see you or like, you know, you're carrying your gear and stuff, people always are like, what do you do? Or what are you here for? And then it really opens people's eyes up to club volleyball, to volleyball still like playing as an adult in adult leagues and things. I love playing in opens. It's so much fun. Getting to see all the age groups and like,
yes,
I want to be out there in some form, like maybe in like still like 20, 30 years.
When you're 70, 75, just going after it.
To see them still playing and out there and really engaged in it and playing. It's cool. So I love playing in opens, and the sitting division's a lot of fun. So
yeah. I remember you know, Steven has a lot of memories with, you know, opens and the sitting division as well too. And you know, all he does is just talk it up. But you know, I couldn't let him, you know, talk for himself since he's also on the call. But yeah, I'm very excited to actually see it now.
Yeah.
And potentially play as well.
Wait, you're playing on the sitting team?
I would like to. Somebody pick me up. I need a team. Yeah.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind.
I would love, I'm not going to be at opens, but I've always wanted to play in the sitting division. Okay. And I've had a name, a team name, set for years. Okay. Just waiting. Colorado team, Colorado based, okay. Altitude Sitness.
How's that? That's classy.
Okay, cool.
I was nervous we weren't going to disclose it because, like, one day you might have a team and you're like,
I know. I've shared it so many times. It's already out. If it gets stolen, it happens. It's a great name. It's a great name. Like,
you're going to speak and there's going to be Altitude Sitness.
I hope so.
There's going to be like three teams.
There's three. I love that. Yeah, one day I'll get to play in that. I won't be there this year, which is unfortunate because it's in Dallas, but it's right around my anniversary. So my wife and I are doing an anniversary trip and a baby moon because we're having a baby in August. So
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you so much. So I guess that's a pretty good reason to miss it, but maybe next year.
We'll keep an eye out for you.
Yes. Yeah, but we'll be on the long list of recruits. Okay, there next year. Yeah,
Curtis is actually going to be there too. He'll be covering, you know, social media and digital while there too. Hopefully, he has some time to play. So, you know, hopefully, we can get on the same team. I know Curtis.
Curtis will make sure.
Yeah, he does. I know he's on this call as well too. But we can let him speak for himself if he's available. I'm just offering names up.
I'll keep it in mind.
Yep. Pat Young on the men's sitting team actually asked me to join his sitting team.
Words. Okay. Look. All right, we're back.
Maybe there's going to be some mid-tournament trades or something. Oh, he's not committed yet. Oh, you could still line him over.
We should have a draft.
Get him a better contract.
Like, those middle school pickups.
And if they have enough players, and then if they don't, we can all just merge and be one.
There you go. One
simple place to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, I love this conversation. But I mean, what are you looking forward to most about having sitting volleyball back and, you know, just on display and, you know, in action at opens?
Yeah, I think... again, like the exposure, when people ask me what I do and I'm like, oh, usually it starts with I play volleyball or I play like sitting volleyball. I usually just say it like kind of slow or I just like wait for the reaction because I'm like, they didn't hear me. They heard volleyball and that's it. And then when they ask more questions, they're like, wait, you're sitting down. It's like this whole like a layer gets peeled off of like, yes, I play sitting down on the ground. We move with our hands and on sitting on our butt. The net is lower. It's like really breaking down the game. And every time that we go to a tournament and play and later we see like some club girls or parents, they always are like, oh, we saw a sitting division and it's us at a tournament. And it's like the most remarkable thing we've seen. It like really opened their eyes up. It's just cool to see the exposure sitting gets from being at huge tournaments like this. So I love playing at it. I love talking about sitting volleyball. I love getting a chance to expose it to people who may otherwise never seen it or heard about it before. So I think it's really good for that.
get ready to sign some autographs because we're announcing that, you know, you guys are all going to be there too. So don't get shy.
We're ready.
Get your public speaking, you know, personality.
Yeah. I'll do my best.
I need to show off the hardware a little bit too.
Oh, yes.
Metal.
Yes.
Maybe bring that along.
Yeah. I love that. We skipped over it really quick, but kind of ties into opens a little bit because that's also you use that, the team uses that as training for the season as well. But what, I guess, you know, the Paralympic qualifications coming up, I believe that's is that May as yeah. well? Okay. Early May, right?
Opens is.
Yeah, that's right. Early May. But, you know, as the team's now gone back to back Paralympic gold medals. What's the energy, you know, around the team, around the athletes there, the women on the team, you know, leading into Paris, you know, coaching staff, what's kind of the message that's going around right now?
I think what's at the forefront is qualifying first. So that's a big thing right now. We have camp this week, and I think this season of volleyball, meaning like this like kind of year, is just about developing our systems well. It's been a lot of transition, like since the last quad to this quad. So I think like incorporating, using, and developing players in different roles is probably a big priority, I think. And then just getting confident in the way we move now as opposed to maybe the way we did a few years ago when we were going for Tokyo in qualifying. So I think winning's at the forefront, qualifying. So we're excited.
Do you have any like personal goals leading into it? You know, after winning gold in Tokyo, anything that you'd like to see yourself improve on?
Yeah, I think being a consistent player, but also being able to be flexible and move into different roles if I need to be, or playing in a different position if that's needed. I think just being in the flow with the team and feeling a good energy as far as, just the energy, the movement, the flow, and getting to be consistent in different roles.
Go ahead, Chris. Go ahead.
Are there any new goals or focuses, you know, that the team is getting behind, you know, ahead of the Paralympic Games? I know we talk about, you know, some of the, I don't want to say routine, but, you know, some of the consistent goals that, you know, you guys have as being, you know, the Paralympic gold medalists. But are there any new goals that have come to the forefront?
I feel really bad about that question that I don't have, like, but I feel like the goal, you know, winning, being a unit and playing together is like consistently the goal. And I think using what we have to the best of our abilities and showcasing that in our best way, just because there is so many different people who are stepped into new roles. And I think that's the goal, is like, how do we all perform at our best given what we have right now? And being the player, like our best selves, our best player, and our best teammate for one another, I think, is the goal moving forward.
I know we're running a little long here, but this has been such a great conversation. Really want to get to this next topic, talk about your business a little bit, but I want to check in with you, make sure you're still good on time. You don't have to run off to training or anything. Okay, awesome. Awesome. You were so nervous before this, but
I know, right?
Killing it. You were killing it. Yes, this is a great conversation.
Just put these questions on shuffle and, you know, just
go from there. Anything that's not in the little, like, question. You know,
we like to go off topic. Keep throwing a curveball every now and then.
We didn't talk about it. I was going to have to know.
Not have that prepared.
I have a complaint.
Yeah, you can leave that in our reviews on Apple if you'd like.
You'll be put on the spot.
I love it. But yeah, really want to talk about Wavelength Swimwear, your company, your swimwear company. Kind of what got you started with that? What was the interest that kind of, or what piqued your interest in wanting to start that company?
Well, I grew up along like sports, sewing. I have a very crafty side. I love arts. I love crafts. I love anything I think kind of like using my hands and getting to make something. So I grew up sewing and making clothes. I don't think I ever was going to get into a business for swimsuits. But I, along the same time with my ankle injury, when I was down, I had started a fashion blog and I just started like putting stuff out there, putting clothes together and like, you know, and then I came across a handful of girls who were doing tall fashion blogs. They're talking about clothing made for tall women. And they all were kind of like showcasing their favorite dresses and, you know, pants and things. And then in 2016, like the height of the one piece swimsuit, like came back around. Like nobody was really wearing a whole lot of one pieces before that or like making them very stylish. And I was like, oh, I want to put a swimsuit on my blog and talk about it. But I saw all the other tall fashion bloggers wearing the same suit. So I was like, I'm going to go find a different suit and like talk about it, put it on my blog. And I went out and I couldn't find one. I couldn't find one that fit me. Because my torso, I would say it's probably more average for my height, but it's longer than every, you know, and then an average torso just because I'm 6'3". And I remember going to Dillard's, I think, and I asked the lady, like, hey, where are your longer torso one piece swimsuits? And we like looked around a little bit, kind of like shuffling around, like knowing that there probably weren't any there. And then she's like, why can't you just wear a two piece? And then I was like a light bulb went off and I was like, well, I don't want to, one, and two, like, there should be a suit that fits my body. And if there's not one, like, I was like, I'm capable of making one. So I, like, went on this deep dive of, like, researching everything there was to know about a one-piece swimsuit and making it myself. And then that's how it started. And then I don't even think I ever posted anything on the blog because I got too deep in, like, figuring out how to, like, make one. And then when I made one, I was like, wait, other people need this, too. Like, I'm not the only person that needs a longer torso swimsuit. And then it just, like, snowballed into this whole business.
I love that. You don't have it for me? I'll go make my own.
Yeah. Bye. Goodbye. Conversation's over.
The first sample was not pretty. I mean, I gave it my best, but I'd never, like, worked. I'd worked with, like, stretchy pants before, but never like putting a swimsuit completely together. But we refined the skills a bit.
So I mean fast forward, we recently saw that you had a pop-up in LA. Yeah. You know, can you tell us how that went?
Yeah, it was amazing. It was so cool. I don't think you might get lucky if you walk into a store and then they have items made for taller bodies. Like maybe there's a tall pant in any random store, but it's oftentimes not like tall enough. Like I think the range of women who are considered tall, like in mainstream clothing can be like 5'9" to like 5'11", but I'm 6'3". So finding a pair of pants for me in a store has always been difficult. So the pop-up shop was put on by a brand called Tall Size, and it was all tall brands. So like all brands made for women like 6 feet and up. And it was just so cool to see so many women walk in and like emotional about the fact that you were going to be able to shop whatever was in the store was going to be capable of fitting them. And that's something like you don't see. I've never experienced. I can remember wearing clothes that just weren't made for my body and like having to make it work. Like in high school, like pants didn't fit. So it was a very cool experience to talk to so many tall women about their experiences in tall fashion and it just like not really being provided to us for so long. And that was a cool experience.
That's awesome. Yeah. Like the whole community all in one place and yeah, getting to interact with each other. Yeah.
And then just seeing like tall women, it's so cool. Like I don't ever get to see anyone that's like really eye level with me that often. And it was like I was looking up at some girls and it was so cool to see women come in and just, it changes a lot. I think the way you, when clothes fit you properly, like your confidence is different. The way you view yourself, the way you, the public views you is all different when you feel good about the clothes you get to wear. So it was awesome.
What was the reception of your product there from some of the conversations that you had, or, you know, did you take anything away from those conversations?
It was such a learning experience because right now my suits are all just sold online, so I don't ever get human interaction with someone getting to touch the fabric or getting to try them on. So I think just seeing the women's reaction, it like they complimented it a lot. Like, the fabric is so nice, it fit me so well, you know. The like things that I can take away and know how to improve on, or areas where maybe I didn't consider were an issue for the first like suit that I put out, and like moving forward, I can take going into other designs. It was very cool to see people in like interact with my product in person.
I love, yeah, that's like, you know, almost like a physical product test too, that you're just able to like kind of experience that in person. Cause yeah, like you said, you do it mostly online, but to have that feedback right away and direct, that's super cool.
Yeah. Thanks.
For anyone who's, you know, looking to start a business, or, you know, looking to, you know, create their own products or something, do you have any like tips or, you know, things that you've learned along the way that you would like to share?
This could be a whole other podcast.
I had a feeling about this.
Let's see. My most immediate tips are, well, first, like, curveballs come every single day. And if you believe in your product and you believe in what you're doing and making, like, just keep plugging through. It's not easy. And I think being flexible is a main component of being probably an entrepreneur, is being able to adjust on the fly. So I think believing in your product, if you believe in it, you know, keep working for it, keep iterating like what you're doing, and then be flexible, and then take it one day at a time, like taking the very next step for whatever's necessary, so you don't get like overwhelmed by, you know, the big picture.
I think I skipped over this really quick, but I want to go back to do you have any goals? Like, did you set any goals for yourself outside of that? You know, coming out of that pop-up, any goals for your product, you know, for this year, looking ahead?
For this year, I mean, I would, for looking ahead, because I think that pop-up was such a success that it sounds like there needs to be like a solid store, not just a pop-up for Tall Women's Fashion. So I would love at some point to be in a physical store. That would be something that would really be exciting for me. And then I think this is like, it's not a far off goal, but it's something I've thought about. And maybe like even saying this here is like a good platform, because I would love at some point having a team. I don't know if I'm sponsoring it, but the Manhattan Six Man, like providing the suits that are.
Oh, yeah.
For maybe a team that is playing. That's something I think I could do in the next few months.
Wow. If you're listening, you know who to call.
Like, let me know.
That's so cool. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
I have one more question for you. I don't know if I know we're getting close to the tail end of things too, and we're way over time. But you know, with all the accomplishments, you know, through, you know, some of the, you know, major and minor setbacks that, you know, you've had throughout your life and your career, do you ever take a pause, a moment in time to just really sit and reflect on how much you've been able to accomplish and, you know, succeed in and impact and inspire people and, you know, all the above?
Yeah, I think I've gotten better at that, maybe probably just in the last year, especially when you are going through something that is tough or doesn't feel like it's going as planned. It's always helpful to have people in your corner that are like, first, take a deep breath, and then like look back, like look at all you've accomplished up to this point. Like, first of all, you're not failing. Second, like, you got this. You know, I think it's hard when you're in the moment and you're always like going forward, or you're training and you're like training for the next big thing, or you're wanting to put your swimsuits out in this, and like all the big things are coming at you, that it's sometimes you get lost in that without taking a deep breath and looking back at like all the things you've accomplished up to this point. Like, sometimes when I do that, I'm like, I've lived lifetimes of things that I just am so proud that I was able to experience
at my age now, I'm like, that's something, it feels like a lifetime ago, but that was like a whole little life in itself. When I think about like playing overseas or being a college athlete, and I'm like, that's just, those are big deals. And I don't think that I take a minute enough to like look back and say that, you know, you did good. That was cool. You did what you did. Mm-hmm. So
that's awesome. I hope there's many more moments like that to come for you. That's incredible. And this has been an incredible conversation. Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us. If anyone's interested in following your journey, or, you know, if there's a 6-man team out there looking for a swimwear sponsor, where can they check out your company? Where can they find you?
Sure. You can find me on Instagram at Whitney Dosti, and the swimsuits are at Wavelength Swimwear. And then you can find the swimsuits on wavelengthswimwear.com. And there's a Facebook page. So really all the social media platforms, I'm there somehow.
Yeah, and tune in to your own personal Instagram, Wavelength, I'm sure, as well, we'll share. But if you have any other pop-ups coming up in the future, that's where you'll share that, right?
Yep, that's where it'll be. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you again. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about or share before we let you go here?
No, I feel good about it.
Awesome. I feel great about it too.
I mean, I'm excited that I didn't have any music on the spot, but
don't worry. We'll ask you that it opens. Don't worry about it. You got time.
Better.
We'll get you back on the podcast soon, I'm sure.
All right. Thank you so much. I had fun.
Thank you too. I had a lot of fun too as well. Mm. Great to talk to you again, and good luck this season as you prepare to qualify as well.
Okay, sounds good. And Clarence, I'm going to keep in mind, if you're looking for an opens team, I really will, because I still got to find a team.
I know you have my email, so...
Yeah. Look, I have an email ready to hit send already. Just kidding.
That's great.
No, I will definitely offer you contact.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Whitney. Bye. We'll talk to you later.
You know what I'm still waiting for? I'm still waiting for, you know, her music selection and all that stuff, too. I think that was it.
You really threw a curveball on her there.
I did.
She wasn't ready for it. But I liked her answer, though, you know.
Yeah.
You know, if she could put it on shuffle, or she puts it on shuffle, but then she kind of used that answer as well for, like, favorite foods.
I know.
And she's like, if I can just put my life on shuffle... or my food selection on shuffle.
State answer across the board, but it's okay. We'll circle back it open.
That would be cool, though, if you could just like enter in some sort of machine, and
that'd be cool.
The AI would know what exactly you wanted without you even knowing yourself.
Put my life on shuffle and end up working for table tennis. I'm just kidding. But I mean, on top of that too, we don't have to spend too much time on it because you guys already saw her, listened to that amazing interview. But like her family story, that full circle moment at Arizona with her parents meeting, you know, in the arena, and then Whitney later played volleyball and you know, was induction into the Ring of Honor. Like, just so much family history in that one place. This is insane.
Yeah, I can only imagine just the feeling that she and her family had just standing in that arena as she accepted that honor, getting inducted into the Ring of Honor. Just, you know, all the memories coming back to her, all the memories coming back to her mom as well. And just being in that gym just coming back to that gym and that for a full circle moment, like you said, just incredible. And just such an awesome moment for that family to look back on as well. They get to go back to that arena and watch volleyball matches, basketball matches, and get to see her name there in the arena. So cool. Mm-hmm.
I know. And, you know, just talking about opens very briefly again, you know, for those who are attending opens, you know, like you mentioned before, check out the sitting courts and, you know, watch them with their matchings and, you know, the exhibitions happening, and, you know, talk to the athletes. I think we're going to be setting up some, you know, autograph sessions too. So make sure, you know, you get, you know, your pictures and autographs and really get to meet them. And, you know, especially, you know, talking about Whitney specifically here, amazing personality, amazing athlete, just an all around, just great person. You know, she won't be staying for the sitting division, unfortunately, but, you know, that training session for those first 3 days, definitely take advantage and, you know, definitely meet the 2-time Paralympic gold medalist and, you know, the rest of the, you know, the sitting team as well. But just I'm very excited. I'm excited for Dallas. So I keep bringing up opens. We had a great game here. It's just amazing.
I'm excited for the after action report when you get back from opens too, and hearing all about it. That's exciting. Yeah. And speaking of the Paralympics as well, the Paris Paralympics qualification event is coming up. That's the 2023 Paravolley Pan American Zonal Championships in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada on May 9th through the 13th. That's for both men's and women. So our U.S. men's sitting team will be there along with the U.S. women's sitting team. And they'll be competing for qualification for the Paris Paralympic Games. So a huge deal. We don't know at this moment if it's going to be streamed, but I would assume it is somewhere. Maybe that's Facebook or YouTube, but we'll have that information as we get a little bit closer to, and then we'll talk about that. But very exciting for both those teams to get that opportunity. And hopefully we come out with two qualifications. That would be awesome. Mm-hmm.
Fingers crossed for sure.
But again, Whitney, thank you so much for such an awesome conversation. Clarence is looking forward to seeing you at Opens. I wish I was going to be there as well, but I'm sure that we will get to catch up later down the road. But good luck to Whitney at Opens, you know, of course, with her booth as well. I think that's going to be really cool. So if you're interested in Whitney swimwear, wavelength swimwear, check out her vendor booth. She'll be there. She just did a pop-up. She talked about that, her LA pop-up, and had a great time doing that. So she'd love to meet you, talk to you about her products. And yeah, I think it's just going to be a great time. Opens is such a fun event. So if you're going, definitely check out Whitney's booth. Like Clarence said, go watch sitting volleyball, meet the athletes, meet Whitney. It's going to be a lot of fun. But you can also follow Whitney and the rest of the U.S. women's sitting national team at USAB_sitting_WNT. And you can follow Whitney at Whitney Dosti on Instagram. And if you have questions for her about sitting volleyball or her swimwear, she'd be happy to talk to you there. So reach out to her there.
And also, fun fact, I believe her mom was also helping run the booth too.
So. Oh, there you go. You didn't get roped into to helping run the booth?
And I, you know, not really.
She didn't come up to you and be like, hey, I got to take a lunch break. Can you man the booth for a second?
I'd gladly do that too. If the opportunity presented itself. But I mean, yeah.
That's awesome.
Again, big thank you to Whitney. Thank you for coming on and excited to see you at Opens. I know, you know, Curtis the Stoot, since he'll be on the grounds.
That's right. That's
another covering the event as well. But now, on to upcoming events. Up the Vine with Steve Aaron. Take it away.
That was great. Coming up, we have the NTDP Beach Accelerator in Gulf Coast, the Gulf Coast region, and on May 5th in Gulf Shores, Alabama. The NTDP Indoor Accelerator, Chesapeake region, May 5th in Washington, D.C. And the NTDP Indoor Spring Training Series, May 5th through the 7th, also in Washington, D.C. The USA Volleyball Beach Tour Gulf Coast Beach Fest National Qualifier, May 5th through the 7th in Gulf Shores, Alabama. The Mad Sand Juniors, May 6th in Plano, Texas. The USA Volleyball Beach Tour Arizona Desert Open National Qualifier 2. That's the 14U and 18U divisions, May 7th in Glendale, Arizona. The USA Volleyball Beach Tour Chesapeake Wave Summer National Qualifier, May 13th through the 14th in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. And I love this, the Bring Your Mom to Beach Day, May BRQ, May 13th in Galveston, Texas. That's awesome. I love that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, celebrate Mother's Day on the beach playing beach volleyball. Can't get any better than that. But good luck to everyone competing in those events, and shout out to all the USAV region setting up and hosting those events. More details on all upcoming events can be found at usavolleyball.org. Now, on to the pro side of things, we have the 2023 Norsega U19 Girls Pan American Cup. That's May 7th through the 15th in Puerto Rico. The Paravolley Pan American Zonal Championships, that's the championships that we just mentioned, where both our men's and women's sitting national teams will be there competing for a spot to represent USA at the Paralympic Games in Paris 2024. But that event will be May 9th through the 13th in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Stay tuned for any more event details, and as well as the streaming details for that as well. The Beach Pro Tour Men's Futures in Madrid, May 11th through the 14th in Madrid, Spain. So good luck to everyone competing in those events on the pro side as well.
A lot of events coming up. Wow. That's a lot of
Bollypalooza. Bollypalooza.
Bollypalooza. I love that we're getting back into the beach side of things too. It's always
great. For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure.
But remember, listeners, you can rate, review, and share this podcast with your friends, families, associates, teammates, whoever. It really helps this podcast grow and reach new listeners. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Curtis gave us an update that we are past and surpassed 40,000 downloads since this podcast has begun. We've just passed our 2-year mark, and that is a really, really, really amazing milestone. So thank you all for continuing to listen in and support this podcast. You can also check out our video episodes on our website and on YouTube. Once again, thank you all for your continued support. If you know of a club that should be featured or a story that you'd like us to share, centered around any aspect of volleyball, any aspect of, you know, just literally anything, you can email us at the USAV show at usav.org. You can also leave us feedback. Let us know how you're doing. Let us know which episode was your favorite. Let us know. Ask us how you get a mug that Stephen's been, you know, showcasing throughout the podcast. Let us know if you want a t-shirt, literally anything. I'm just saying, just email us. You never know what might happen. And like when emails come through that inbox too. And also let us know about any future topics you want to hear about. We're really trying to hit that 100 episode mark. So any topic, every topic helps. Until next time, thank you all for listening to the USA Volleyball Show. We know this episode was long, but we know it was a good one too. So thank you all. We are the official podcast of USA Volleyball.
This has been the USA Volleyball Show with Clarence Hughes and Stephen Munson. Produced by Curtis Ward. Our content producer is Laura Fawcett. Our marketing lead is Bree Jaycox. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to rate and review. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the USA Volleyball Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.